Hello, my name is Travis Hoberla, and today I'm going to talk with you about porting drivers to Windows Embedded CE 6.0. This talk is going to teach you how to take your drivers, whether they're in CE 5.0 or a previous version, and get them ported and updated so that they can run in CE 6.0. We'll start off with an overview of the new kernel architecture and how that's relevant to drivers. Then we'll dive down into specific driver porting tasks that you may need to look at. We'll go through a real example of a real component that was ported from CE 5.0 to CE 6.0, and then we'll wrap up. So let's begin by talking about what's changed in CE 6.0 at a high level. Well, in CE 6.0, we have a new kernel architecture. Now, drivers, as well as some system critical processes like Device Manager and GUIs, have moved into the kernel process. So in CE 6.0, we have drivers running in the kernel process under Device Manager. In CE 5.0 and previous versions, these drivers ran in the Device Manager in device.exe, but that was a user mode process. Now we can still load user mode drivers in CE 6.0 using the user mode driver framework, that's udevice.exe. However, this talk is going to focus on where most of your drivers will be moving to, which is kernel mode, running in the kernel process. The overall concepts and best practices for drivers remain the same between CE 5.0 and CE 6.0. However, it's possible that there is some porting work we'll need to do to get our drivers up and running in CE 6.0. So let's begin by looking at what the memory map is in CE 5.0, and we'll see how that's changed to CE 6.0. So in CE 5.0, we're running a 32-bit operating system, so we have 4 GB of addressable virtual memory space. The upper 2 GB in CE 5.0 is kernel space, that's the kernel process. The lower 2 GB are 1 GB for shared memory, and then the last gigabyte is this is where all the user processes live, and it's divided into 32 slots. We have 32 process slots, and each process gets 32 megabytes of virtual memory. The active process is loaded in slot 0, but the virtual memory of all 32 processes is available at any time. So, because even though the process may not be active, it's still valid in virtual memory, it's very easy for us to go and view another process's memory as long as we have the kernel permission to do so. In CE 6.0, that changes. We still have 2 GB of kernel space in the upper address space, but now down at the bottom, we have 2 GB per user process, which means that we can have up to 32,000 user mode processes, and each of them gets their own 2 GB virtual address space. However, the trade-off is that now only one process can be loaded at a time. System critical processes like the Device Manager, GUIs, file system, and a few others have moved up into the 2 GB kernel address space so that they are always accessible. But things in the user process space may not always be accessible. So let's think about what that means. This means that we can't access another user mode process's memory directly because it's not actually valid in virtual memory. As such, APIs like setk mode and setproc permissions, which rely on that virtual memory always being valid, those no longer make sense. Now, process swapping this 2 GB of virtual memory in and out is generally inexpensive. However, if you have a virtually tagged cache like ARMv4 or ARMv5, then you need to invalidate that cache between process switches. That's an important difference between CE 5.0 and CE 6.0. So let's take a look at the memory maps side by side. In CE 5.0 and CE 6.0, our kernel address space looks pretty much the same. We have 2 GB of addressable space. The only difference there is that in CE 6.0, now some of our critical processes, like the Device Manager, are running in the kernel. The big difference is in the user space. In CE 5.0, we have these 32 processes that are always valid, whereas in CE 6.0, each user mode process gets its own 2 GB of address space, and only one user mode process is accessible at a time. We'll revisit this later because this has some important ramifications for porting drivers. So, in CE 6.0, what does our user space look like? Well, the upper 1 GB is used for a variety of shared data, like the shared system heap and RAM-backed map files, and user DLLs and code and data. What we're really concerned with in user mode from a kernel mode driver perspective is this 1 gigabyte of process space in each user process. So this lower 1 gigabyte is what user mode processes will use to allocate virtual memory, file-backed map files, and other things that we may pass into our driver. So if your driver needs to access a user buffer, typically what it's going to be worried about is this lower 1 gigabyte of process space. In the kernel space, we have pretty much this. We have the same thing as we had before in CE 5.0. In the lower 512 megabytes, there's statically mapped uncached memory and statically mapped cache memory. And then right above that, kernel DLLs are stored. And this is where file system, GUIs, device manager, as well as all of your kernel mode drivers, this is where they're going to be in CE 6.0. So that's the only thing that's really important about the kernel space, is that you now have drivers running in the kernel in this kernel DLL slot in between C00 and D00 there. And the kernel address space was always valid regardless of what user mode process is currently loaded. So what does the OS look like as a whole in CE 6.0? Well, in the user space, we have applications, shells, services, and the user mode driver framework, as well as the user mode versions of Core DLL and several other application services. The kernel has its own version of Core DLL, and file system, GUIs, network, device manager, all of these things, as well as the kernel, live in the kernel mode space. In the lower right-hand portion of this slide, the drivers that are living underneath device.dll, that's where your kernel mode drivers are going to be architecturally, and that's what this presentation is focusing on. So before we talk about individual porting tasks, let's talk about why we would want to move drivers into the kernel in CE 6.0. Well, in CE 5.0, every call from an application to a driver required two process switches for that call to complete. First, when the application called through the kernel to the driver, the kernel would need to swap out the application's process and swap in the driver process, device.exe, into the active process slot. And then the driver would perform any calculations that it needed to do, and then the kernel would have to swap the driver process back out and swap the application process back in to the active process, that's slot 0. So we required two process switches every time we called into a user mode driver. In CE 6.0, now we're calling into kernel mode drivers. And since that kernel mode address space is always active in the upper 2 gigabytes of virtual memory, we don't actually need to swap out the user mode process at all. So the application can stay in user memory, and the kernel mode driver will operate in that kernel address space in the upper 2 gigabytes. Now, as a result, when we call up into the kernel, our driver looks a little bit different in kernel mode than it did in user mode. So that's where we might have some porting work to do. So in CE 6.0, our drivers are going to run mostly in the kernel. Backwards compatibility is maintained for several drivers, which means not all of your drivers will require porting. In fact, it's possible that no drivers will require porting. However, for some drivers, there's required porting, and the areas where that porting, where we need to look and see if porting is required, center around four main themes: access checking, marshalling, thread permissions, and security and reliability concerns. Now, we'll dive down into each of these points in more detail in just a bit. But before we do, I want to talk a little bit about terminology. I want to clarify the difference for our purposes of our discussion today of a pointer parameter and an embedded pointer. A pointer parameter is basically a first-level pointer. It's passed directly to an API. So for example, the pbuffer pointer in our read file call here, that's a pointer parameter. It's a pointer at the first level that points directly to data. An embedded pointer, on the other hand, is basically a nested pointer. So if we're passing a structure that has a pointer inside of it into device IO control, which is a common place where we'd see this, then that's what we're going to call an embedded pointer. Anything that's nested inside a structure at any level of depth. So you could imagine, embedded pointers pointing to structures with other embedded pointers, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the difference between a pointer parameter and an embedded pointer. In the first place where we're going to need to be concerned with pointers and porting in CE 6.0 is around access checking. So in CE 6.0, our drivers are now running in the kernel. So that means that if we had an application that was malicious or stupid, then it could pass a pointer to the kernel address space in its buffer. And it could ask the driver to read or write to a buffer in the kernel address space, because remember, that address space is always valid. So that means it could read memory in the kernel, could read sensitive data, which is bad, or it could just write over the kernel, which is really bad. So now the drivers run in kernel mode, they have a higher privilege and they have access to more memory. So it's really important that kernel mode drivers validate user pass pointers. And this validation is called access checking. Now, the same thing existed in CE 5.0. And in CE 5.0, map caller pointer was used to validate both pointer parameters and embedded pointers with respect to the caller process. You see a lot of calls to map caller pointer in the ioctls of device drivers. In CE 6.0, the kernel is going to automatically check all of the pointer parameters, all of those first level pointers. However, now it's up to the kernel mode drivers to do access checking on embedded pointers. And the kernel provides two new APIs for access checking, CE open caller buffer and then its corresponding friend CE close caller buffer. So let's take a look at what those APIs look like in CE 6.0. So let's say, we have a process hello.exe running in user mode here, and we have a kernel mode driver in the kernel process. Hello.exe is going to pass a buffer to driver.dll, and inside that buffer, there's going to be an embedded pointer. Now, the kernel is going to check the buffer itself that's being passed in, because that's basically a pointer parameter to what's going on inside of hello.exe's process space. But the embedded pointer that hello.exe is passing in, the driver needs to call CE open caller buffer to access check that buffer and make sure that we're not pointing off into kernel address space or some other invalid address space. And so it's going to call CE open caller buffer to check that buffer and CE close caller buffer when it's done using it. So what does CE open caller buffer do? It basically verifies that the caller has access to the memory addressed by the embedded pointer. So whatever that pointer is pointing at, we need to make sure that the caller actually should be able to touch that memory. So CE open caller buffer is going to create an access checked pointer for the driver to use. And then optionally, we can actually duplicate the embedded pointer buffer, and we'll talk more about that when we get to the security and reliability concerns. So we'll call CE close caller buffer when we're done with the buffer. And here is an example in code of what that looks like. So in CE 5.0 and previous versions, up at the top here, in our IO control function, we would pass in an embedded pointer, and we would just call map caller pointer on that embedded pointer that we passed in. In CE 6.0, instead of calling map caller pointer, we're now going to call CE open caller buffer on that pointer, and then we'll do whatever operations that we want to do with that pointer, and when we're finished with it, we'll call CE close caller buffer. So that's access checking in CE 6.0. The next topic we're going to talk about is called marshalling. And marshalling is probably the most difficult and most complex thing that we're going to talk about in this presentation. So if you can stay with me, then I promise you cookies at the end. Marshalling. If we're passing pointers from an application to a driver, we are basically passing pointers from one process, which is the user mode process, to a driver, which is running in a different process. Now in CE 5.0, most of our drivers were running in the different process of device.exe. And some special case drivers were running in guis.exe or filesys.exe. In CE 6.0, our application is passing pointers to nk.exe, which is the kernel, or to user device.exe, which is the user mode driver framework. So, because we're passing pointers from process to process, there's some translation that's needed to access the other process's memory. So in CE 5.0, because all 32 of our slots were valid in virtual memory at any given time, it was very easy for us to map the caller to the caller process, because you could just do a simple offset value, add or subtract a multiple of 32 megabytes to that pointer value, And then make sure that the thread permissions were there, and boom, you were in the other process's virtual memory. But in CE 6.0, that virtual memory may not even be valid in the user process space. So we need to do something to marshal that pointer into the kernel process. And that's going to allocate resources inside the current process so that we can access that memory. So in CE 5.0, the map caller pointer API handled marshalling for both pointer parameters and embedded pointers. And as we talked about earlier, the reason that you could do this is that all of the process's virtual memory space was always accessible and valid, so marshalling was just an offset. In CE 6.0, marshalling depends on how the pointers are going to be used, synchronously or asynchronously. So we'll cover the synchronous case first because it's easier. In CE 6.0, when I say synchronous marshalling, what I mean is that we're accessing the caller's buffer on the caller's thread context. Regardless of whether it's an embedded pointer or a pointer parameter, we know that that caller's address space, which is the user mode process, we know it's going to be accessible for the lifetime of the call. So basically, the driver, the user mode process, is blocking on that call. So we don't have other threads trying to mess with that memory. We don't have anything asynchronous going on there. And because of that, we know that that user mode process is always going to be valid in memory. And as such, the driver can use that caller's pointer unchanged because the user mode process will be active in the lower 2 gigabytes of memory. The kernel driver will be active in the upper 2 gigabytes, so it can access it directly. And of course, it has permissions because it's a kernel mode driver, so it has all the permissions that the kernel does. So synchronous marshalling in CE 6.0 is kind of an oxymoron. There's no marshalling needed. This is what it would look like if we were to do this. So app.xt is going to make a synchronous call to our kernel mode driver up in driver.dll. So we've got a buffer, and we pass it into the driver, and app.xt's thread is running right now. If we swap over to test.xt, we know that the driver isn't going to operate on app.xt's buffer because app.xt is waiting until it can run. Basically, we know that app.xt's process is always going to be valid in synchronous access. It's blocking on that driver. Hello.xt can switch in, and we know that we're not going to access that buffer until we come back to app.xt. Then the driver will, you know, do whatever it wants to with that buffer, and we'll move on. So that's synchronous access. It doesn't require any marshalling. That changes if the pointer is used asynchronously. If the pointer is used asynchronously, then the caller buffer has to be accessible even if the caller's address space isn't, which means if we try to access the caller's buffer using just the virtual memory pointer that was passed into us, that virtual memory pointer may not be valid because the caller process may have been swapped out from underneath us. So in CE 6.0, asynchronous access requires porting. So that's where the new marshalling APIs come in. And those APIs are CE alloc asynchronous buffer and CE free asynchronous buffer. So let's take a look at what that looks like. So app.xt has a thread here, and it's going to allocate a buffer, and that buffer is going to be accessed asynchronously by our kernel mode driver. So the driver is going to call CEALloc asynchronous buffer, and that's going to either alias or copy that buffer into the driver's address space, which is the kernel mode address space. Then when we swap hello.xt out, that buffer is still valid inside the kernel address space, and the driver thread inside running inside the kernel can actually modify that buffer, and because it's modifying valid address space. It's not touching anything in hello.xt. Then the driver will call CE free asynchronous buffer, and that will update the buffer in app.xt space, so that once we return to app.xt space, app.xt can operate on that buffer with the updated value from the driver. So that's asynchronous access. That's CEALloc asynchronous buffer and CE free asynchronous buffer are our marshalling APIs that we're going to use to make sure that asynchronous access works correctly. Now let's talk a little bit about marshalling and performance. Calloc asynchronous buffer can create either an alias or a copy of the buffer that's passed in. Now, on large buffers, creating a copy is going to have a negative impact on performance. The kernel is going to make an intelligent performance decision for you, but in case you want to force an alias, there's a flag that you can pass into the Calloc asynchronous buffer API called Marshall Forced Alias. This is something that you can use if you know that your buffer size is going to be large. Typically, we would say over 16 kilobytes is a good performance cutoff. But more importantly, this is a flag you can use if you require that the physical memory is aliased. Now, we'll talk a little bit later in our example of why it's important that we would want physical memory aliased. We'll talk about a design that requires it to be aliased that you may find in some of your drivers as well. One thing to note is that if you do alias, this is going to cause source and destination memory to be accessed uncached in ARMv4 or ARMv5. This is due to the virtually tagged cache that we talked about earlier. We want to avoid cache aliasing, so we have to access them uncached if we're creating an alias, a virtual alias. And once we call CE-free asynchronous buffer, though, they'll be restored to their original cache properties. So here's an example of what marshalling looks like in the asynchronous case. We have an asynchronous embedded pointer that we're passing in. So in our I/O control where we're passing it into, we will call CE open caller buffer to perform access checking on that pointer. Then after that, we will call CE alloc asynchronous buffer optionally with that Marshall Force Alias flag. We'll do whatever we want to with that pointer asynchronously, and when we're done with it, we will call CE free asynchronous buffer, and we will call CE close caller buffer, and we'll be finished operating on that pointer. The next thing I'd like to talk about, the third topic out of four as far as porting goes for drivers, is thread permissions. Now in CE50, certain processes and threads like protected service libraries had access to the caller's buffers while they were in the caller's thread context. However, other threads like interrupt service threads did not have access to the caller's buffer. They got access to the caller's buffer using the setproc permissions API. Now in CE6.0, setproc permissions is deprecated. It's a no-op. It doesn't do anything. The nice thing is that if we're using CE alloc asynchronous buffer, it's going to marshal the caller's buffer into the kernel's virtual memory space. And the driver already has permission to the kernel's virtual memory space because it's running in the kernel. So there's no need to change permissions in that case. So as an example, in CE5.0, in our IO control function, we may get the caller's thread permissions by calling get current permissions. And then in a different driver thread, we would use setproc permissions to basically temporarily elevate our privilege so that we could access the caller's buffer even though they weren't calling us directly. And then we'd restore our permissions with setproc permissions once we were done. In CE6.0, it's really easy. For synchronous access, we don't need to do anything because we're the kernel as a kernel mode driver, so we already have access to that user mode process's memory. And if we're accessing it asynchronously, then we've marshaled that buffer into the kernel space, so we have access to it in the kernel space. So we can always use the marshaled buffer, and we don't need to do any special things with thread permissions. So the porting in terms of thread permissions is actually really easy. Just remove your calls to set proc permissions. The last thing I want to talk about as far as porting is security and reliability in CE6.0. Now, in CE6.0, drivers are going to run in the kernel mode. That's a new thing. Kernel mode drivers, because they're running in the kernel, they must handle all the possibilities, regardless of whether you have a stupid caller or a malicious caller. Accessing their buffers may be unsafe for you to do. And it could have really high impact because your driver now can access kernel memory. So let's think of a scenario where our caller passes in a buffer, but a second thread in the caller process modifies that buffer asynchronously, perhaps while the first thread is still in that driver API call. So the second thread could modify that buffer even after the driver has performed checks on it. This could cause invalid input values. It could cause invalid buffer lengths and lead to buffer overruns, which are a major security issue. could cause invalid pointers that would lead to exceptions and crashes. And if we don't have handlers for those exceptions and crashes, then that could lead to memory leaks. That basically means that a user mode application would be able to wreak havoc on our system. Of course, the easy solution is to do something called secure copy. Before the driver does checks on the buffer that the caller is passing in, it's just going to copy the caller's buffer into kernel space where the user can't touch it, and then it will decide what to do with whether the input is valid or invalid. So to secure copy a pointer parameter, there are APIs available for you to do that first level pointer. CE-ALLOC duplicate buffer and CE-free duplicate buffer will create a secure copy in the kernel. If you want to secure copy an embedded pointer, all you need to do is set the force duplicate parameter of the CE open caller buffer API that we talked about earlier to true. So force duplicate equals true for the CE open caller buffer will copy that embedded pointer. Secure copy also makes buffers safe for asynchronous access in the driver because that memory is copied into the kernel and it's always going to be valid in the kernel. So for small buffers where you want to make sure that the user can't modify them, basically where you don't completely trust your caller and know that they're always going to give you data that you expect, then secure copy is the right thing to do. Alternatively, you can alias the buffer. Obviously, for a large buffer, you don't want to make a secure copy because it would just take too long and impact performance negatively. So if you are aliasing, then remember that the callers can still modify the buffer while the driver is using it. So surround your buffer accesses to alias buffers with try except. You don't need to put your entire driver in try except, just the caller buffer access that you don't trust. And then make sure that you clean up any resources and accept or finally blocks. Now, as long as you do this only on the user buffer accesses, the performance impact is really minimal. In fact, it's only a couple of instructions, unless you hit the exception, in which case you really wanted that performance impact because the user is potentially trying to mess with you. However, the security and stability impact of try except is very high. It could make the difference between all those things that we talked about earlier, invalid buffer lengths, buffer overruns, memory leaks, crashes. It can help us avoid all of those problems. So either secure copy your buffers or be careful with your aliased buffers and make sure that you surround those buffer accesses and try except. So now that we've covered the four major porting tasks, access checking, marshalling, thread permissions, and security and reliability, let's take a look at an example of a real component ported from CE 5.0 to CE 6.0. The component that we're going to be looking at is called Wave API. And Wave API is an operating system component that sits in between audio applications that want to play audio and audio drivers. It's private code, so you can't look at the source code whenever you want to, although we'll take a peek in this presentation. Wave API handles user buffers, and it abstracts the management of those user buffers from the driver so that writing audio drivers is simpler in CE. Now, the architecture of Wave API is identical between CE5 and CE6. Nothing has really changed about it. But in CE5, Wave API ran in device.exe, which is the user mode process for drivers, and in CE6, it's implemented in device.dll, which is kernel mode. So it's basically a driver that's moving from user mode in CE5 to kernel mode in CE6, and that's exactly where we need to think about porting. So it's a great example of what a real driver port looks like between CE5 and CE6. So let's talk about what Wave API does and get a sense of what's going on at a high level before we dive into actually, you know, the differences between CE5 and CE6 and look at the ported code. So the architecture for Wave API goes something like this. The application has a series of Wave header structures. They're basically buckets where there's a pointer to audio data, and the application is going to fill the audio data pointer repeatedly. So we'll allocate in the application a few wave header structures and repeatedly fill that audio data asynchronously. Wave API is going to make a shadow header, which is basically an extended copy of that wave header structure that the application passed in. It's also going to have a pointer to the application's audio data. And then Wave API is going to pass that data pointer into the driver so that it can play it on the audio hardware. Now, it's important to note that these wave header structures are going to be reused. So these audio data buckets, we're not allocating and destroying them every time. We'll allocate them initially, and then we'll refill them, which means that we're accessing the audio data asynchronously in Wave API, and we need to accommodate for that. So that's one of the reasons why Wave API is a great example of a driver ported from CE 5.0 to 6.0. So let's take a look at the functions that are actually going on in Wave API in CE on the application side. So a user mode application is going to allocate that buffer for audio data, and it's going to fill that wave header structure that we talked about with a pointer to the audio data. Then it's going to call a function in Wave API called waveOutPrepareHeader for each of those wave headers, and it's only going to call that prepare header function once. Now, while there's audio data left to play, the application is going to call the waveOutWrite function using those wave headers. And waveOutWrite is going to return and indicate that it's basically in queue, or, you know, that's the asynchronous way of saying this audio data is waiting to be played. Then the application will get asynchronous notification for when that queue is complete, or basically when the audio data has actually played, and the application will refill that data. It'll do that in a loop, keep calling waveOutWrite over and over and over again until there's no more data left to play. Once the application has processed all of that data, it's going to call waveOutOnPrepareHeader. On the driver side, things are actually pretty simple. The driver is just going to receive buffer pointers asynchronously from Wave API. If it's a CE5 driver, it's going to call setProc permissions to make sure that there's actually, that it's able to access the user's buffer. And then it's just going to instruct the hardware to operate on the buffer. Often, you know, DMA will be used for this. Now, since the drivers are coming, since the buffers are coming from the user, the driver is going to encapsulate all of those buffer accesses in try-accept. But it's not going to handle any of the access checking or marshalling or any of those other things on its own, because Wave API is doing that for it. Now, let's take a look at what Wave API is doing. In CE5, the waveOutWrite function is really simple. It's just going to do a quick validity check on the header, and it's going to queue it for sending to the driver. The major work gets done in the waveOutPrepareHeader function, which is only called once for each wave header structure. And remember, we're reusing these wave header structures. What it's going to do is allocate a shadow header, basically a secure copy, in the device.exe space. And then it's going to map the wave header from the user process space to the device.exe space using CE map caller pointer. So it's going to map that wave header in there using CE map caller pointer so that it can make that shadow header. It's going to do the copy to the shadow header. It's a manual copy since the shadow header has a few additional fields. And then finally, it's going to map the data pointer to that data bucket to the device.exe space, again using CE map caller pointer. So that's what's going on in CE5. Allocate the shadow header, map the wave header using CE map caller pointer, copy it, and then map the data pointer using CE map caller pointer. In CE6, waveOutWrite does pretty much the same thing. Checks the header for validity and queues it for sending to the driver. But waveOutPrepareHeader is different. Remember, CE map caller pointer is no longer a valid API in CE6. So what waveOutPrepareHeader is going to do is it's going to access check that header that's passed in, the wave header, using CE open caller buffer. And then it's going to allocate a shadow header just like it did in CE5, except this time, because Wave API is running in the kernel, it's going to allocate that shadow header in the kernel space. Then it's going to perform a secure copy from the original header to the shadow header. Again, manual copy because the shadow header has a little bit different structure, but it needs to be encapsulated in try-accept in case the user tries to change that pointer while the secure copy is going on. Finally, it's going to alias the user data to the kernel address space using the CEALK asynchronous buffer API with the Marshall Force alias flag. Now, remember, when I say that it's going to alias that user data, it's basically taking that bucket that the user has filled with data and creating an alias that the driver can use to access the physical memory. So it's creating another set of virtual memory that points to the same physical memory. It's important that we alias it as opposed to copy it to new physical memory because we're going to refill those buffers. If we didn't alias, then what would happen is we just play the same three or four buckets of physical memory over and over again. Even though the application was refilling it would be refilling the wrong physical memory. So we need to make sure that both the driver and the user mode application are pointing at the same buffer, and that's where Marshall Force Alias comes in. So now let's take a look at the Wave API code in CE 5.0 and CE 6.0. So let's take a look at what we're doing in CE 5 in that wave out repair header function where we do most of the work. So here we see WAPI common prepare header. This is basically what happens when we call wave out prepare header in the Wave API. And what it's going to do is it's going to take that wave header that the application passed in here, and it's going to map it into the device.exe space using this API called map write pointer. Now, what is map write pointer doing exactly? Basically, map write pointer is just calling CE map caller pointer. Map read pointer, on the other hand, is just doing the same thing. So basically, that's just a simple shim for map caller pointer. So we've got to use CE map caller pointer to get this wave header valid in the device.exe space. Then down here, we're going to call get shadow header to create a shadow header from that wave header, and we'll do the secure copy there. Now, further on down the line, based upon whether we're doing audio output or input, we're going to take our data buffer, which is this wave header LP data, right? And we're going to call, again, CE map caller pointer via this map write pointer API to map the data into the device.exe space so that it's valid there. And then finally, we'll operate on that data and be able to pass that to the driver. Now, here's where we're actually doing the secure copy of the shadow header, not above, but the allocation there is basically the same. We're just doing a direct copy here, a manual copy. And then now, once we've finished all of this, we have a valid header and a valid set of data that we can pass from the device.exe Wave API space into the driver, which is also running in device.exe. So how does that change in CE6? Well, in CE6, same function here, WAPI common prepare header. Now, instead of calling CE map caller pointer, we're allocating the structure called marshaled buffer. And we're using the marshaled buffer marshal function on this wave header that we've passed in here. What's going on in the marshal function? Well, I think that you'll see some things that look pretty familiar. In marshal, basically what we're doing is we're going to take that pointer that we've passed in, the unmarshaled pointer, we're going to call CE open caller buffer on it, and then if necessary for asynchronous access, we're going to call CE alloc asynchronous buffer. Now, we can set up these parameters in Wave API, and we do. So for this first wave header, we're not going to need to call CE alloc asynchronous buffer. We're not going to need to use that asynchronous access because we're not planning on accessing that wave header asynchronously. We just want to be able to copy it. So here, we're going to try accept, allocate that new shadow header, and copy all of the user data so that we can safely get our shadow header constructed based upon what the user passed in. Now, further on down the line, we're going to do the same thing that we did in CE5, which is to map that data pointer. Except remember, map caller pointer doesn't exist in CE6. What we're going to do is just call CE alloc asynchronous buffer to make sure that that data pointer gets mapped in correctly. Now, you'll see in the line right above here that we are passing in the Marshall Force Alias flag as a descriptor to that CE alloc asynchronous buffer call. That's because remember how we talked about earlier, we're reusing those data buckets in the driver and the application is refilling them. So we need to make sure that an alias is created. We don't want to do a copy and just play the same three sets of audio data over and over again, because basically doing a copy prevents the application from reusing those buckets. So that's part of the design of Wave API, is that you can create that alias and then refill those buckets without having to go through and call CELK asynchronous buffer and make a new shadow header and do all of those things multiple times. Remember that this function that we're looking at in both CE5 and CE6, this prepare header function, wave out prepare header, is only getting called once. And that's just to set up the memory for the buckets. Once this thing has been called, then we can reuse those buckets over and over again and play our audio data. So this is an example of what the Wave API code looks like from CE5 to CE6. Now you've seen CE open caller buffer and CE allocate asynchronous buffer used, and you've seen how Wave API creates a secure copy of the shadow header. There's one thing that's in here that we haven't talked about, and that's set proc permissions and what happens there. Now set proc permissions would be something that the CE5 driver would use, and we'd want to remove it for CE6. Wave API doesn't actually handle the driver operating on the data itself, and that's where we would need those permissions in CE5. So what I have here is basically just a simple diff of the Wave Dev driver in between CE5 and CE6. And okay, there's some copyright stuff. Otherwise, they're pretty much identical. The driver is virtually identical between CE5 and CE6. The only difference is that the CE5 driver removed this saving and restoring of the proc permissions. And literally, this is just a direct diff of the CE5 and CE6 code. You know, I didn't modify it at all. That's just what it looks like. So for many of your drivers that aren't concerned with asynchronous access or with embedded pointers, this is all that you're going to need to do, or you may not even have this much to do. In this case, Wave API is handling kind of all of the dirty work for this driver. You saw it's what was calling map caller pointer and allocate asynchronous buffer in its inner working, so that the driver didn't have to. So some drivers will require that porting work, but now that you know what's needed, you can take a look at your drivers and find out exactly what you need to do there. And fortunately, you don't have to do that all alone. We actually released with CE6 a driver compatibility tool that you can run on CE5 or other DLLs that checks your driver out and looks for deprecated, unsupported, or kernel-only APIs that may not be available in CE6. So here are the instructions to use it. I'm just going to leave this slide up here for a little bit so that you can take a look at it, but hopefully we can post this presentation on Channel 9 as well so that you can browse through it at your own pace. And the output of the tool looks something like this. Basically, for each DLL, you have a list of APIs that are fine, a list of APIs that are deprecated or kernel mode only. Obviously, for kernel mode drivers, your kernel mode only APIs are just fine. You can use them. But you'll want to look for these red APIs, which are deprecated. Like you'll see set proc permissions will show up in red here. So that's the driver compatibility tool that you can use to find out, hey, how much porting work do you anticipate having to do on your drivers? So in summary, in CE 6.0, drivers move to the kernel, although you can isolate them to user mode if they don't need to be especially performant for security purposes. You need to access check embedded pointers in your kernel mode drivers. You need to marshal asynchronous buffers for your kernel mode drivers. You can remove all of those calls to set proc permissions, because the access checking and marshaling will handle that for you. And it's important that as a kernel mode driver, you don't trust your caller, which means that you either need to do secure copy of the user's buffer, or you need to make sure to access any aliased caller buffers in try except. Some drivers are going to be backward compatible. For those that aren't, then you have this presentation, and hopefully you're well on your way to getting your drivers working in CE 6.0. Thank you for listening.